Órale pues, Raza, welcome here to Chicano Highlights. I am your host, The Beto Man, and we have a very special guest, Mr. Phil Gonzalez. ¿Cómo estás?
Muy bien, gracias. Thank you.
Good, good. Tell me, where are your parents from?
My father was born and raised in Chino, California. And my mother was born in Lindsay, California, and then moved to Southern California as a youngster and moved to a town called Laverne.
Okay, what are their names?
Dolores Garcia Gonzalez and Ruben Hernandez Gonzalez.
All right, and were they second, third, fourth generation here?
Well, actually, I have figured that out, that my dad was probably fourth generation here in the United States. And my mother was third generation here in the United States.
Wow.
So we are able to trace back. And after that, it gets into one of the great-grandparents that were actually from different parts of Mexico.
Wow. What part do you know?
My great-grandfather, Juan Valdez, was from Guadalajara. And he worked for the government during the revolutionary period of 1910. And he was a calligrapher, and his brother also worked for the government, and his brother was poisoned because he did work for the Diaz regime. And when that happened, he began to realize that maybe his life was in danger as well. So that's when he moved and migrated to the United States.
All right. And so then you were raised where?
Well, interesting, I was born in Pomona, California. And my parents lived in Laverne, but while I was growing up as a youngster in my early years, my mother and father were still going and attending college. They were the first in their families to attend college. They were both going to Laverne College. And so what they did was they had me stay with my grandparents, and my grandparents lived in Strathmore, California. So up until I was about 5 years old, I spent a good amount of time staying with my grandparents. And then once I started school, that's when I moved back into Laverne and began going to elementary school there.
All right. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have an older sister that passed away in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And she was 2 years older than me. I'm currently 58 right now. And then I have a younger brother, that's 10 years younger than me, and a younger sister that's 8 years younger than me. So my older sister, Kathy, younger sister, Lori, younger brother, Maurice.
Maurice, orale. All right. And where did you go to school? Where was your elementary, middle school, high school?
In Laverne, California, and on the border of San Dimas and Laverne, I went to an elementary school called Grace Miller School, and then a junior high called Ramona. And then to high school, Bonita High School, which is in Laverne, California.
All right. While you were growing up, your parents, what did they do? What did they work in?
My mother and father were both teachers. My mother taught in elementary level, second, third grade. And my father worked at Covina High School teaching Spanish. And then later on, he would move into administrative positions in different school districts as he was trying to advance himself in administration.
All right, so in your family, did everybody go to college?
Yes, not everybody completed college. My older sister went to college and became an attorney here in the city of Riverside, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And my younger sister went to San Diego State and graduated. I think she has a degree in journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And my younger brother began school at Imperial Valley College, but I don't know exactly how many courses he completed.
Right.
But he'd never completed a four-year degree.
Right, right. Because it does make a difference when the parents, you know, have a job, a good-paying job, and are instructors, and that kind of frames the children in which direction they're going to take. Right?
It certainly was a factor.
Yeah, yeah. And so then growing up, you grew up in the barrio, right?
Well, again, my grandparents lived in the barrio,
mm-hmm.
and that's where I spent a good amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents moved to about five blocks away to just a location, about, again, about 5 blocks away from the barrio, but into a nicer neighborhood. We had a very nice house and a park nearby. The school was nearby and so forth. So they were making the attempts to and proceeding to make the moves that you do when you want to improve yourself.
Okay. And so then what did you think of discrimination? I mean, did you face that at all, or was it different? Did everybody at that period face it?
There was definitely discrimination, and I think, unfortunately, when you're young, you don't perhaps understand it or realize it's going on. But as I look back, I realize it was certainly there. There were friends that came from Spanish-speaking households that were my same age, and we played together and we did everything together. But then when the school bell rang, they went into special education classes because they didn't have command of the language. Mm-hmm. And everything else was equal. And then as I got into high school, I also noticed that when I would try to seek employment there in the local community, I was perhaps not given some of the opportunities that some of the Anglo students were provided with.
Mm-hmm. So what did you think of the whole Chicano movement? I mean, this was your time. This was your period. The whole civil rights movement, the protest movement, the Chicano moratorium, all of that good stuff.
I had some interesting experiences because my mother and father were both involved with the Mexican-American Political Association, MAPA. And as involved as they were, I got exposed to the procedural part of understanding voter registration at a very young age because my dad became a registrar. I also got to meet some of the pioneers of the Chicano movement. Burke Corona was regularly at our home, stayed there occasionally overnight when some of the activities, you know, went on very late. And so those were people. He was one person that I knew that obviously was very involved in politics, but later I would realize that he was also very involved in advocating for different kinds of labor rights and very involved in Chicano movement and a very important person. Additionally, Edward Reval was at that time in the Los Angeles area and needing support from different communities. And so I got to meet him at a very young age. I think I was maybe 9 or 10 years old. And again, very, very important person in terms of looking at Chicano role models. And he became one of the people that I personally would admire because of all the things he was doing and knowing all the discrimination that he had to overcome as a young person and as an adult, even working in the legislative Congress level. So my exposure was probably very unique. And again, as I reflect, I realize that I learned a lot by watching the modeling that was in front of me. And I learned how to stuff envelopes, run the mimeograph machine, those kinds of things in order to do all the things you needed to do to further cause, further interest, and further, again, the election process, which my dad and mom were both involved in.
What year did you graduate high school?
Graduated in 1972 and went right to Long Beach State and was looking at that time going into a physical therapy, some kind of sports-related major where I could be involved with athletics and be involved with working with athletes.
Mm-hmm. And what degree did you earn?
I earned a degree in Mexican-American Studies from Long Beach State.
Wow. Well, congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a long time.
So coming out of the university experience, what jobs did you hold?
Well, when I first graduated, it's very interesting. I was still possibly considering going into the physical therapy school at Long Beach State, but there was a waiting list. And ironically, my former eighth grade teacher, Mr. Richard Flores, who was a friend of my parents, had become the personnel director at Santa Ana Unified School District and knew that I had graduated and had dropped by the house and said, are you interested in being a wrestling coach and a teaching job at Santa Ana Valley High School? And I looked at him in somewhat disbelief of, are you serious? Really? And then yes. So that's what happened. I became a teacher there at Santa Ana Valley High School. Since I had to finish a teaching credential, I enrolled in a program through UC Irvine, and it was called a intern program. And so I finished my credential off over about the next year and a half, and that's how I entered the teaching profession, was basically through my former eighth grade teacher, again, a friend of the family, offering me a position that I didn't know I was going to be so interested in.
Wow. Now, you also play a little bit of the guitar, right?
Yes, I began playing I think I might have been in seventh grade when there was a local community guitar class, and my dad asked me, did I want to go to try the class out? I remember going to the class and being somewhat intimidated because the class was very, very large. I didn't even know how to hold the guitar. I think I went to maybe one or two lessons, and then I stopped going because it was mostly college students that were attending this, and again, I think I remember being a little intimidated because, again, I was such a beginner, and many of those people attending already knew some of the basic chords and strums, and I was still trying to get my fingers around the neck of the guitar.
Yeah, yeah. Was the instrument a part of the family, or did you just pick it up because you liked the guitar?
My dad played the guitar, and again, I think he was looking at maybe taking lessons along with me, but I didn't understand that till much later. But one day, I'd gone over to visit my my grandmother, my grandma Angela, and she lived in Chino, and my dad would occasionally, you know, take me over there, but as once I got my driver's license, I began to go over there and visit my grandma. It was always fun to go see her. And one time she pulled out a mandolin because I told her about the guitar experience, and I had no idea that she played a mandolin.
Wow.
So she went to the cupboard of a very nice cherry furniture chest, pulled it out, and like she was part of a band, proceeded to sit down and just play beautifully. And I was kind of sitting there dumbfounded, like, wow, you know, I you know, grandma, I didn't know you could do this. And of course, this whole conversation takes place in Spanish, but just beautiful music. And I was blown away that that, you know, this talent existed, because I didn't know that she had it.
Exactly. And so then, what did you think of bands at that period? Were you aware of the Chicano bands?
Very much so. My one of my closest cousins, cousins Robert and Ronnie and Herbie, these were cousins that I had grown up with. They were basically my same age. We were all within a year or two of each other. They began to play the guitar regularly and formed a band. And I would, you know, obviously, when they were practicing at their house, I would, you know, maybe get on the congas or something and play. But I didn't play the guitar again, because they had become very polished at it. They kind of went the music route, and I kind of went the sports route. So, and you know, at that time, you do the things that interest you.
Mm-hmm. What sport route?
Oh, I was I played on a football team, and I was a wrestler.
Oh, tell me.
And, well, the football was something that was fun because it was part of a team. Your friends from the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
Growing up with, you know, you see it on TV and you read about it and see it Sports Illustrated, and you want to be a part of that. And the wrestling exposure happened because my dad took me to a wrestling match at the high school where he worked. And I was fascinated with the idea of being able to go one-on-one with somebody and to be able to, you know, achieve a victory through skills and through, you know, the idea that you knew moves and how to do that. So I actually excelled at wrestling while I was in high school and would eventually get a scholarship to Long Beach State. So that's how the Long Beach State connection came about.
Wow. And the Chicano bands, were you ever fortunate to go see any or did you ever run into any?
Well, again, with my cousin, we would go sometimes to the Battle of the Bands, and they used to have them there at the Pomona Fairgrounds. And I remember going to one particular one where there was, you know, several good bands. And many of those bands would later become the bands Both Tierra and El Chicano, because the VIPs were, which would change their name and become El Chicano. We saw there at one of those Battle of the Bands because they were real well liked. They were very good musicians, and they were just doing a lot of the musical blends that, again, that those early Latino Chicano bands began doing that made the music unique.
Wow, wow. And so then getting back to your work experience, anywhere in there, did you get married?
Got married when I was in college, mm-hmm. and still married to that same person. Mm-hmm. We've grown together with our lives, and while I was in college, she helped support and put us through college. I say us because we benefited from the things that happened as a result of getting a college education. And I can recall several times while I was in college trying to convince her, why don't, you know, you come to college with me? And at the time she had a very good job and was interested in doing well with her job and advancing there. And so didn't have the interest at that time to actually do a college degree. So it wasn't till we started a family that I convinced her that she really needed to go on to school, and I could take care of our daughter, and she could begin taking community college classes, and then, you know, complete her degree while we were raising the kids. And so she finally did that, and she became a teacher and has had a 20-year plus teaching, you know, career. So she also worked at a high school.
And what's her name?
Her name is Kathy.
And where did she work?
She worked all her career at Fresno High School.
Okay.
And did a really good job of putting together a program there that I know motivated and inspired a lot of kids to first of all stay in school and actually complete their high school education, and also many of them have gone on to pursue careers, and some of them have gone on to college, and I know it's kind of a direct result of her influence. So that's been encouraging because we've been able to do many things together that have been, you know, advocating for those kinds of programs.
Now, how many children do you have?
We have two children. We have Rena, our daughter, is an attorney with the city of Riverside. And our younger daughter, Elisa, works with Madera County Animal Control in Madera, California.
All right. All right. And so now, are you playing with a regular band today?
I play with a group called Marimba Lucero, and it's named after the group leader. His name is Stanley Lucero, who is an accomplished musician, and also he's an accomplished educator. And we have been friends for, and I was trying to figure that out the other day, I want to say about 27 years that I have known Stanley. And I met him at a conference where he was doing workshops with music, with small children in bilingual settings, playing the guitar, playing music. And he was just fascinating. Singing the songs, playing the guitar, doing the motions. Just had those kids just doing all kinds of things, and everybody was having a good time. So kept connection with him, and then when I retired from the community college position I had, I began seeing him on a regular basis and just kind of saying, hey, you need to help me out with learning some of these different styles. And so our relationship turned into, I remember him the first time he asked me, you know, do you want to sit in with a group? And I kind of looked at him like, you know, really? Sure. And then now we're playing a couple of times a month regularly at a local restaurant that we do other gigs depending on what comes up.
Mm-hmm. What local restaurant?
It's there in Madera. It's called the Maya Grill.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a small place, but we play for a couple of hours and have a very good time. The other thing that we all do as members of the group is we have all kind of been okay with volunteering our time for different kinds of activities. There was a youth conference that was done, and so our lead singer said, hey, you know, will you guys come and play at the conference during the lunch hour? So, you know, I'll come in and donate our time in doing that, and it's really a lot of fun. And I work with the Ronald McDonald House Charities in the Central Valley, and they were doing a dinner for their volunteers. So I asked the group, hey, will everybody willing to come over and play for this dinner for these volunteers that do this work for Ronald McDonald House? So we still have the idea that you need to give back to the community in whatever form you can, including playing music.
All right. And so then what job are you working in today? I heard that you retired at the community college. What?
Well, I was working at Madera Center, Madera Community College, and I was the full-time counselor there. I'd been at that position for about 10 years. And previous to that, I'd been a high school counselor, and previous to that, I'd been a high school teacher. So I got to the point where I had put about 30-plus years in. And during this time, I had the opportunity, I think for about the last 18 years, to teach part-time at California State University, Fresno, teaching Chicano Studies classes. And I was usually teaching at night. And so I had told the department chair that I was going to retire from my community college job, and he immediately said, oh, good, you can start teaching day classes. And I kind of chuckled and said, you know, sure. And right now I'm teaching three classes at Fresno State, in two of them are in Chicano Studies. And interesting how this retirement thing has worked out, because I'm still busy, but yet I still have some time to do some other things.
You know, and that is just beautiful that you're willing and able to still cooperate and be in the community. That's very important.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
All right. So then looking at, you also have a famous uncle, and we'll talk about him just a little bit. Tell me about his murals.
Well, when I was growing up as a young person, I knew that my Tio Chano, Daniel Gonzalez, my father's youngest brother, had a tremendous talent with art. And he began in the 1970s doing different mural projects in different communities, and including here on the UCR campus. And I was pretty much aware that he was doing this. Occasionally, I would actually be at a site where he was doing it. But for the most part, this was something that he did very spontaneously. If somebody had an open wall and provided some paint, he would throw up a mural. And tragically, he was killed in 1979. And I remember telling my wife, I said, you know, his kids aren't going to know about the murals. And I said, I think I need to make an effort to try to photograph as many of them as I can so that, you know, his kids will know about them. And that turned into a much bigger project, with photographing murals, with doing artists that he worked with, interviews, doing some research about the styles of painting that influenced his murals. And it actually led me into the relationship where I met you. And so through that, one of the murals being here at UC Riverside, I was able to meet Estela, and Estela is a friend of my daughter Rena, and you're a friend of Estela, so therein lies the network that created bringing us together.
Exactly. Well, let's just clarify a couple of things. Estela works for the Office of Chicano Student Programs. She is the director, Estela Cunha, and the mural is based and centered as a centerpiece, actually, in Chicano Student Programs. So the mural, they wanted to whitewash it back in 83, something like that. And they offered like $30,000 to the Chicano students there, and they refused, and they cut the mural into panels, and they put it on mobile, a way to move it around, and it's been following the office ever since. So the mural has existed. All the students love that mural, and it has a history, a very long history, which was almost wiped out. Now, where are some of the other murals of your uncle's?
There are some of them no longer exist. One of the bigger murals that he did in Chino has since been demolished as a part of a building that it obviously was attached to. Corona, locally, Redlands. I believe there's some in Colton, Pomona, as well as again here in Riverside. So the murals are basically here in the Inland Empire area, and fortunately, I was able to photograph a number of them again before they were either, destroyed or in some cases painted over.
Okay. Now, you do a workshop on these murals, correct?
Yes, and I actually did one here a number of years ago through the Chicano Studies program. And I've actually had the opportunity to go as far as the University of Wisconsin-Madison to do a workshop with the National Metro Conference there a couple of years ago. But I've done them in different places, one at the University of Southern California with the Association of Mexican American Educators Conference, at several local colleges there in the San Joaquin Valley, West Hills College, and obviously at Fresno State. So have the opportunity whenever someone asks or has expresses an interest in having that presentation done. I'm usually willing to make it work.
All right. Well, that sounds cool. Now, what would you tell the youngsters, that are out here listening to us about school?
Well, I never really saw myself going and completing college. That was not something that I understood when I entered college. As I was there in college, I began to realize that I could be successful. It was a tremendous amount of work. It was a learning situation in terms of developing goals, time management, and also being able to motivate yourself to complete your studies. So sometimes I think people don't see themselves because perhaps they maybe don't have a role model, or they don't have perhaps some of the support around. But there is support. You can achieve. And sometimes you have to take the risk of putting yourself in the situation of, I'm going to try this, and I'm going to try to be successful at it. And you have to be willing to sometimes fail, and also be willing to try something over again if you do fail, and then become successful at it. So however you can make college work or make training, education after high school a part of your experience, you should try to do that. I think you'll find it worthwhile in terms of your quality of life in the long run.
All right. Now, is there somewhere where people can contact you if they're interested in a workshop or they need to talk to you? Is there a Facebook account, something like that, an email, a phone number, something?
I work at California State University, Fresno.
Okay.
And I can be contacted there through the Chicano Studies program. And that would probably be the easiest way.
All right. What's the number?
278-2848 is the area code 559. So 559 278-2848, Chicano Studies.
And you are looking for Mr. Phil Gonzalez. We want to thank you for coming in.
You're very welcome. Gracias for having me.
All right. That's going to do it for us, Raza. Hasta la próxima. You've been listening to Chicano Highlights. This is your host, the Beto Man. And we will see you again. Hasta la próxima. Ahí te guacho.
Que se quede el infinito sin estrellas, o que pierda el ancho mar su inmensidad, pero el negro de tus ojos que no muera, y queda igual.
Si perdiera el arco iris su belleza, o las flores su perfume y su color, no sería tan inmensa mi tristeza como aquella de quedarme sin tu amor.
Me importas tú, y tú, y tú, y solamente tú, y tú, y tú. Me importas tú, y tú, y tú, y nadie más que tú. Ojos negros, piel canela, que me llevan a desesperar. Me importas tú, y tú, y tú, y solamente tú, y tú, y tú. Me importas tú, y tú, y tú, y nadie más que tú.
Se quede el infinito sin estrellas, o que pierda el ancho mar su inmensidad, pero el negro de tus ojos que no muera, y el canela de tu piel se quede igual.
Si perdiera el arco iris su belleza, o las flores su perfume su color, no sería tan inmensa mi tristeza como aquella de quedarme sin tu amor.
Me importas tú, y tú, y tú, y solamente tú, y tú, y tú. Me importas tú, y tú, y tú, y nadie más que tú.
This is Phil Gonzalez. You're listening to EastLAReview.com. I'm an instructor with California State University Fresno, and I'm encouraging you to stay in school.